This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship. Remember to subscribe and download episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Or you can find us directly on our social media pages, Healing Paths Recovery, or directly on our website, www.healingpathsrecovery.com. And while you're there, I would love a review. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thanks for Sharing. I'm your host, Jackie Pack, and I'm excited to be back. I have most of my voice back, I think, and I'm not sucking on as many cough drops throughout the day. I used to have a pack of, there's like 19, 20 in a package, and I would go through one of those a day. And so I kind of gauge my improvement based on, you know, how many days a bag of cough drops lasts me. And it's getting better. I still keep them with me and I still use them every day, but not every hour, not continuously. At one point it was continuous and I don't feel like I'm there. You know, the other thing is I talk a lot for my job, and that kind of maybe isn't the best when you have a sore throat or a cough or something like that. And so I'm not as many cough drops. I think a bag of cough drops is now lasting me about 3 days. So that's some significant improvement in my mind to where I was going through a bag a day. So I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be recording. For those of you who are members in my Patreon account, I did not get anything released in Patreon in the month of March. And because I'm recording this the end of April, I have not gotten anything released into the Patreon account for April either. And I apologize for that. Like I said, I just did not want to put something out there with a voice that sounds like that I'm a boy going through puberty. So I did not put anything out there, but I will be putting two things out there in May to catch up and to thank you for being my Patreon members. If you aren't a Patreon member, check us out at the Patreon app. We're under Thanks for Sharing. I believe it's no spaces. So just spelled out, Thanks for Sharing with no spaces. And you should recognize, I think there's a picture of me and it's very similar to the podcast logo. So you should recognize that. Today, let's get started on today's episode. So today I wanted to talk about compartmentalization. And I want to talk about, because sometimes, you know, with the clients I work with, the way I'm talking to them about compartmentalization, it hasn't necessarily been a healthy thing in their life. And I want to just, you know, kind of clarify in this podcast that there are some benefits to compartmentalization, but it can go awry. It can become problematic. And so we're going to talk about that as well. But I don't want everybody to think that if you compartmentalize, somehow that is unhealthy behavior, because there's a lot of reasons why we might compartmentalize in our life, and that actually it might serve us well and be a healthy coping mechanism. So I wanted to get started and let's just talk about compartmentalization. Well, I wanted to first start with this quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald's book, The Great Gatsby, that I think touches on compartmentalization. He says, quote, "So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past." And I think this line suggests the struggle to move forward while also being pulled back by the past. And, you know, I think that's a illustration of compartmentalization that maybe keeps us stuck or keeps us from actually making the progress that we would want to make in our life. I know recently in April, I was faced with a situation where, you know, it was a situation that had arisen from the past. And I was angry about it, and I felt like it was not right. And I felt like, you know, the person who was creating the issue for me, I felt like they were unjust or not being honest, or that like their behavior compromised their character. And I wanted to fight, right? I wanted to fight. And, you know, I'm lucky, and maybe some of you are lucky. I recommend being able to put some people in your life that you can talk to when you're in these situations and just kind of run it by them and get their perspective, as long as, you know, they kind of know your life, know what you're about. And so, you know, I did a Zoom call with two people that I know. And, you know, one of them I talk not frequently, but he's one of my go-tos if, you know, I'm facing a difficulty or I'm needing some direction and maybe some grounding. And then another guy that I know fairly well, and I just, you know, was kind of explaining the situation that had arisen. And, you know, they both basically said to me, you know, Jackie, you've been putting in a lot of effort and you've been putting in a lot of energy to moving forward. And I think I mentioned maybe the beginning of the year, sometime in January, that we had some, you know, just some team issues that had arisen at Healing Paths. And I mean, they had arisen before January. They were maybe coming to a head the end of the year and into January. And, you know, I felt them. And I think most of the team felt the issue, right? As we talked about it, pretty much everyone acknowledged that there was kind of this elephant in the room. And some people had their own ideas as to what it was or maybe why they had gotten more disengaged. And other people, and I too, I had felt it. And I just, you know, I could not put my finger on what was happening. And often for me, and I told my team this, like if there's ongoing struggles and I can't put my finger on it, it is very easy for me to default to this must be about me. I must be doing something wrong. I must not know something. I must whatever, right? Fill in the blank. It's easy for me to go back to that trauma script. And so I was kind of caught up in that trauma script. You know, I kind of talked to this one man who I would say is on my consultation team several times about it. And, you know, he was extremely helpful, I felt like. And, you know, and so we had been, I felt like we were moving forward. You know, we had to make some adjustments. Some of the team members had to, I think it was just best that they parted ways. And so I let them know that. And, you know, with the rest of the core team, you know, I was kind of working on let's move forward and rebuild what I felt like was a strong core team that we have. And I felt like, you know, we were doing that. And so when I was talking to these two about something that had come up, you know, they both said, like, look, you've been putting a lot of your effort and energy and your focus on moving forward and like building what you want for the future and kind of doing some vision work and goal work and like just really, you know, establishing the present and then going forward. And they said, I'm questioning how effective it will be for you to go back into the past and fight that battle. And I probably knew they would say something to that effect. And, you know, one of them said to me, like, there will be a cost. And he's a business owner. And so he said to me, like, you may feel like right now not fighting the battle is the cost you're going to pay. And he said, in my opinion, I would say going into the past and fighting that battle, like, that's the cost you're going to pay. And you don't really know what that is. And, you know, I appreciated that. I had scheduled this meeting for a reason. And I thought on it and I just kind of decided I'm going to let it go. I don't know what would have happened had I fought that, but I'm just going to let it go. And so I think similar to this F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, we can get caught up in our past in a way that keeps us from going anywhere, right? Or going into this vision or having growth that we want for ourselves, right? And maybe we don't recognize that by going back into the past, we're getting in our way of what we want in our present. So let me just give you a definition from psychology about what compartmentalization is. So compartmentalization refers to the process of segregating conflicting thoughts, emotions, or behaviors into separate mental compartments or categories. And the benefit or like what compartmentalization is helping us to do is to reduce the cognitive dissonance that we might be struggling with or that is difficult for us as human beings. I think cognitive dissonance can be a good thing, but sometimes it can also be too much or it can be too hard for us. And so, you know, when I sometimes am explaining compartmentalization to clients, I'll talk about, you know, sometimes I picture like, I don't know what they're called, like those places, I see them in TV. I don't know of any here in Utah. I see them in like TV or movies more on the East Coast of like people have died and they've been, I'm still thinking this is a COVID brain where my brain just kind of blocks on some wording. They've been, anyway, where we just have ashes left, right? Where they have been cremated. Cremated is the word I'm looking for. And, you know, and so it kind of looks like there's a bunch of different drawers, or sometimes it looks like a bunch of different like vaults, or, you know, depending on the movie, if you know what I'm talking about. Other times, you know, I do picture like walking into a room where there's just all of these, you know, bookcases with shelves and like all of those boxes that you would put, like filing boxes upon filing boxes, right? And I picture that kind of being like the brain that has been compartmentalized. Now, obviously, that's not what our brain looks like. But when I think of that, that's kind of what I think about. And like I said, compartmentalization doesn't have to be thought of as a negative thing. You know, I think some of the reasons, the benefits of compartmentalization, right? I think there is some emotional protection that comes when we compartmentalize. I think within this category of emotional protection, compartmentalizing allows individuals to kind of protect themselves emotionally by separating the distressing thoughts or the experiences from their everyday life, right? So sometimes I will say to clients, like, you know, I'm sure that for you to have all of this going on in your life as a kid, whatever that all of that is, right? And then to have to just go to school every day and function like you're just a normal 7-8-year-old, you're just going to fourth grade, be a 9 acting like every other fourth grade, except you've got this, you know, storm happening in your house, or you had this life-altering event. And in order to do that, we kind of have to put the distressing experience in one compartment, right? I think sometimes we put the feelings about that distressing event in a different compartment so that we can kind of go and be this 9-year-old kid, right? And play baseball or play soccer and go to school and have friends and try to just kind of be a normal kid, right? And so I think on the one hand, compartmentalization, you know, allows us to emotionally protect ourselves. Now, that can go too far, and we'll talk about that when we talk about compartmentalization becoming problematic. But I still want to talk about like how compartmentalization can be helpful. I think compartmentalization is definitely a coping mechanism, right? And it usually serves as a coping mechanism during times of stress. It can serve as a coping mechanism during times of trauma, kind of enables us to, again, be able to kind of clear the pathway and be able to focus on our responsibilities without being overwhelmed, right? I think if our brain did not have the capacity to compartmentalize, it would be pretty dangerous to our psyche for some of the situations that we can encounter as kids or that can happen to us or not happen to us, right? Like, I think trauma is both things that happen that shouldn't have, as well as things that should have happened and did not, right? And I think to have really that full awareness or to feel that to the degree that maybe we should feel that could really be damaging to our psychological development and to our overall psyche. So I do think that it can be a healthy coping mechanism. Again, that happens sometimes when we're younger, but I think that can also happen in our adult life as we're, you know, encountering stress, different things like that. Sometimes it's helpful. I know for me, when I go, you know, through periods of time, on the one hand, you know, I enjoy my job and I feel like when I've gone through some periods of just stress, I wouldn't say, you know, I've gone through some loss as a therapist. I've had different things happen that, you know, sometimes my clients are aware of that. And, you know, they've talked to me about that. And that's, you know, I am uncomfortable not being in a stable place and having my clients know that. I don't like that when that happens. You know, that happened, like, for instance, when my mom died. You know, I was in a session. My husband had to interrupt that session. And I think it just kind of got out that, you know, I'd had a death in the family. And so when I came back to work a couple weeks later, you know, a lot of my clients would bring it up. And, you know, that was uncomfortable for me because a lot of times whatever's going on in my life, I can put that in one compartment and I can come to work and I can be present with my clients. And in some ways, like, working with clients and, you know, kind of being present with them has helped me at times compartmentalize what's happening in my life. And yet sometimes when clients are aware of that, you know, they'll bring it up. And, you know, it's not that I don't appreciate it. You know, some of my clients would say, like, hey, I'm just practicing relationship skills that I've learned from you. and I would feel bad if I didn't ask you how you're doing. And so I appreciate what they're doing. It's just uncomfortable for me. I think it's uncomfortable for a lot of therapists when we have things going on in our own life that we can't necessarily hide or keep hidden from our clients. And probably we shouldn't have to, right? Sometimes, like, I think for a lot of my clients, they appreciate knowing that I'm a human being and I have things happen in life too. So, you know, I think it can be a healthy coping mechanism. I think another way that compartmentalizing helps us is, like I was just kind of saying, it kind of goes with a coping mechanism. It helps us maintain our functionality, unless it doesn't. We'll talk about that down the road. But I think, you know, compartmentalizing helps people maintain this functionality in different areas of our life. Like I was just talking about with work, right? It can be about relationships or personal development, things that we're going through. And so I think, you know, sometimes we have those things compartmentalized. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily need to, but, you know, because I think for me, in my personal, like, close relationships, you know, they know what's happening with me on my personal development. They know that. Like, I talk pretty openly to my spouse, especially about what's going on for me in therapy, like as a client in therapy. You know, I talk to my kids about that. You know, my kids have at one time or another been in therapy themselves. And so they kind of understand the process and they'll talk about what's going on with their therapy and, you know, what they're learning in therapy. And so, you know, I think we don't always have to have them in different compartments, but, you know, we can. And that can help us maintain our functionality. You know, if we don't bring work home with us, you know, if we're not talking about other things that are happening or other stresses are kind of following us around from area to area of our life, I think that can sometimes make things a little bit messy. Although I am a believer that, you know, the people close to us in our lives should know, like, you know, 85-90% of what's happening in our life. And, you know, I don't think anybody has time to know 100% of what's happening in anybody else's life, but I think they should know most of it. And the things that they don't know should not change the impression that they have about what's going on. Another area I think it can be helpful is in social expectations. I think society often imposes expectations, or we're socialized into certain behaviors or ways of thinking, how we should behave in different contexts. And I think a lot of times our socialization leads people to compartmentalize their behavior just in order to conform to social norms. And, you know, I think there's some percentage that of, you know, conforming to social norms is okay and it's not harmful to us. But if we're, you know, complying in a way that interferes with us developing authenticity, or if our belief about social norms makes us stifle our authenticity, that could be a problem. But I think it can also, you know, like some of those societal messages that we get or those social expectations, you know, compartmentalization can help. Or, you know, if we're going into a certain situation. So like when my brother, the brother just under me, he's actually been on the podcast before, but when he was the county mayor of Salt Lake County, you know, I would go to a lot of political events with him. And at the time, you know, he was married, but they had young kids. And so his wife would, you know, stay home with the kids, but he would usually want somebody to go with him. And so he'd say, like, you know, Jackie, come with me. And I had to do some preparation, right? Because I knew I'd probably be asked, like, oh, what do you do for work? And, you know, people are kind of uncomfortable when you're like, oh, I'm a therapist. And, you know, then they're like, oh, do you specialize in anything? It gets a little uncomfortable, not for me, but for them. And so, and a lot of times it just would shut down the conversation. People don't know what to do when you, they don't know what to say when you're like, oh, I'm a mental health therapist, you know, because I think, I don't know. They just, that has been my experience. It shuts a lot of people down. And so I would have to do some prep work to, like, what are, like, things that I can have conversations about with them that aren't necessarily in my wheelhouse, you know, like mental health and all of that type of stuff, but, like, would still be engaging. Or, like, you know, how do I, you know, what kind of questions do I ask them? Because I'm certainly not going to ask the people sitting at the table with me questions that I would ask my clients. And so I just had to do some prep work in order to be able to go to some of those functions and feel like I was fitting in and complying with the social norms. I think another area it can help is with conflict resolution. I think it's important that we have some resolution to conflict. I don't think, just completely stuffing it down and being like, oh, I don't even remember. It's probably too much compartmentalization. But I think, when there is some resolution, I think we can kind of leave some of our really angry or frustrating feelings. We can kind of put that in a separate compartment and let that go so that we can move forward in the relationship or, whatever that is. Maybe it's with a colleague or maybe it's with a boss or a friend or a spouse, and not like just kind of stew in that conflict and those negative emotions. Like I said, I think there needs to be some resolution before we're compartmentalizing. I have had clients before where they will say, right, when a conflict comes up, like I'm able to just kind of forget about it and not talk about it. And I don't think that's healthy. And I don't actually think that's conflict resolution. So, to kind of wrap up that piece, overall, I would say compartmentalization can serve as a strategy for managing the complexity of being human, for maintaining some of our stability, for preserving our mental well-being in various aspects of our life. And so I think in some ways, like, we need to be aware that, yes, compartmentalization can be a healthy coping skill, and it can become problematic. So let's switch and let's talk about how compartmentalization becomes problematic. So I would say, compartmentalization becomes problematic if it leads to a fragmented self. So, if over time there has been a need, and again, I don't think we choose this. I don't think we, are choosing to compartmentalize, and I don't think we're choosing what goes in which compartment. But I think it just kind of, it's a different part of the brain than that prefrontal cortex that is like making somewhat informed decisions. And so I think if there's been excessive compartmentalization, that can result in this fragmented sense of self where, people will struggle to integrate different aspects of their identity or of their experience, and they might become people pleasers, or they might go the other route and just be like, people aren't going to like me anyway, so why do I care, right? And they kind of have this tough facade on that says, like, don't approach me, don't talk to me. And a lot of that can be based on this assumption or this belief that I'm going to be rejected. And so, like, I'm going to reject you first. I'm going to reject everybody first and keep them from even approaching me. So it can go to one of those two extremes. And again, if it is excessive, then we are going to develop a fragmented self. And I think we would have, as part of that fragmented self, we would just have a lot more compartments than maybe is useful. The other thing where compartmentalization can lead to some emotional protection, I think when it becomes a problem, it can lead to emotional avoidance. I think it could also lead to, just being overwhelmed with emotion and not being able to regulate that and not being able to stabilize. And so I think either way, we can overly avoid the emotions, or we can go into this place of like hyper arousal. And that's where we live most of the time. And we operate in this space, where the emotions are quite intense. So, I think while compartmentalization can provide some protection, it can also lead to a block or a barrier from fully processing or addressing emotions. It can lead to unresolved issues. And those unresolved issues are, they can certainly and most likely will show up in our interpersonal relationships, which, will be problematic for us. And so, again, when I said, like, some of my clients will say, like, I can wake up the next day, or I can walk away from a fight and I'm done with it. I'm over it. I question if they're actually over it. I question if they're done with it. To me, I usually think there's an avoidance of that. And sometimes you see this in couples where one will avoid the emotion. And I think as a way to balance each other out, the other one, goes to an extreme in feeling the emotion and holds on to it, which can, reinforce the avoidance, which heightens the intensity of the emotions. So I also see that sometimes with couples that I'm working with. I will also say that another way compartmentalization can become problematic is we can, you know, have a lack of authenticity. I think, you know, compartmentalization can hinder our authenticity and our genuineness, our genuine connection with ourselves and our genuine connection with others. I think sometimes, you know, people will, when it has become problematic, you know, they will kind of read the room or read the person that they're with and decide how they need to show up, which is not authenticity, right? And they can change kind of who these people think they are in different contexts, in different situations. And it can really lead to feelings of disconnect and inauthenticity with the self. It can also lead to a feeling of disconnection with those that we're around and that we're doing that with, that we're kind of trying to fit in or fit the norm or what we perceive their expectation of us is or what would be, you know, good in this situation. They can also not quite feel this connection with us because it's not authentic. And I think it's hard to feel real genuine connection when there is a lack of authenticity. I think that another area compartmentalization becomes problematic is it can lead to stress and it can lead to burnout. So I think if we're, you know, if we're rigid, if we're maintaining strict boundaries between compartments, this can cause a lot of stress. And sometimes I think the older we get, the harder it is to maintain those really rigid boundaries between the compartments. And I think that can just contribute to burnout. Sometimes I think that's when we're more likely to see clients come into therapy because keeping everything compartmentalized has gotten too hard and they don't have the energy for it anymore. And so they will start to come in and see, you know, have conversations about what's going on with them. And so I think it can take a toll and occupy a lot of our focus and our energy by maintaining that strict or maybe even excessive boundary so that like what is in one compartment is not known in the other. We can have compartmentalization where, you know, maybe I'm focused on work or I'm focused in this conversation. I'm focused when I'm present with my family. You know, it's not like I'm completely unaware of other factors in my life. I'm just choosing to be present here. Whereas I think it's a little bit different when there's strict or rigid boundaries between compartments where the, you know, we don't know. Like if I'm in this boundary or if I'm in this compartment, I don't have awareness of what is in a different compartment. And I need that strict boundary to function, right? So sometimes I'll say this where, you know, if I'm talking to a partner or even if I'm talking to an addict and they might say, let me say it like I'm talking with a partner, right? They may say like, you know, I just don't understand how they could do this to, you know, our family or to me. You know, I've always felt like they loved me or I've always felt like we had a good marriage or we had a good relationship or, you know, we have built a good life and I just don't understand this, right? And sometimes, again, if I've explained compartmentalization to them, I will say like, yeah, I mean, I think in one compartment, there is this awareness, there is this belief. And I think it's genuine, right? That like, I love my spouse and I love my kids, or I love my partner and I love my family. But in a different compartment, right, I sleep with other people. And, you know, when they're in this other compartment of acting out addictively, what's in this compartment, right? How much I love my family, how much I love my kids. That's not necessarily in the awareness, right? That's the in the awareness when they are in this compartment. They're not thinking of how hurtful this will be to the partner. They're not thinking of how they're putting their family at risk. And so, you know, like it can be quite rigid at times. And sometimes we don't know what is in a different boundary. Or sometimes I see this too, where I am working with a client and let's say, you know, that in one compartment are the events or these life experiences that they're aware of. It's not like they've forgotten them. They know that they have these life events, but they talk about them with no emotion, right? They kind of rattle them off, just facts, just stats, right? Here's the things that happened. And there's no emotion. I'm not expecting them to break down and cry or anything like that. They don't have to do that, but there's just no emotion, right? And in their language, there's not this acknowledgement of how difficult it was or how hard it was. And so to me, that's a pretty good sign that the feelings around these experiences or these events are actually in a different compartment. And one of the ways that the nervous system and the brain kept this person safe was to split those, right? Like the details of what happened goes in one compartment, and how I feel about it or how it impacted me goes in a different compartment. And so, you know, we are trying to kind of open that up and both know what happened and feel the feelings at the same time, at least in therapy. It's one of the things we're trying to do. I think another area in which compartmentalization can be problematic is it can lead to denial. And then, like I've kind of talked about, some avoidance. So compartmentalization, like I've been talking about, can involve denying or avoiding important aspects of reality. So let's say in this example where the events are of the experience, right? The facts of the experience are in one compartment and the feelings are in a different compartment. You know, people can have a lot of denial around that and it doesn't register with them, right? And so it's not like, they're not connected to reality, right? So, you know, I've had clients who come in and a parent died when they were young and, you know, that they might explain that like didn't really impact them or it impacted them a little bit, but it's certainly not impacting them now, or even that they've kind of joked about it over the years. And I think there's some denial, right? Because the feelings around that are in a different compartment. And at the time, maybe that was threatening to the to our psychological well-being to know that. And so we avoided the feeling, but then we also have some denial about its impact on us because maybe we don't have access to the compartment that holds the feelings or the emotions. And so I think we can, you know, develop ways of avoiding difficult decisions. We can develop ways of avoiding or ignoring problems in relationships, problems in our life, right? We're just not connected to this reality and we can't see the problem for what it is because, again, maybe that way of compartmentalizing, we've just continued that, right? And yeah, like sometimes I will say to clients, I mean, yes, knowing these things as an adult is not as threatening now that you are not a child. And you've developed this way of just quickly kind of putting different things in different compartments. And we have to learn that like you can know all of the different pieces. You can know what's happened. You can see the reality of it. You can feel the emotions about that. You can take action so that it doesn't lead to negative consequences that, you know, you wish you could have avoided. So again, while compartmentalization can be a useful coping mechanism in moderation, right? It's useful when it is moderated and there's not these strict boundaries between the different compartments. It can become problematic when it starts to interfere with our emotional well-being, with us developing authenticity, and it can really become problematic in us feeling overall life satisfaction and finding meaning in our life. So I want to talk about the other part of compartmentalization, which I think is serenity. So a quick definition of serenity. Serenity refers to a state of calmness, tranquility. It's an inner peace. It's characterized by a sense of contentment, acceptance. Even in the face of challenges or uncertainty, we still have a feeling of acceptance. Serenity involves a feeling of harmony, harmony within ourselves and within our external world. And it's often accompanied by a clear and a focused and present mind. I would say serenity is a state that is sought after for its ability to bring about relaxation, clarity, and emotional stability, which then can lead to a lot of other things that we might want to pursue or want to move towards or have personal growth around. And so, you know, I heard Dr. Patrick Carnes say, I think I've heard him say it a couple of times and it's really stuck with me. And he was talking about serenity and he was saying, serenity is when all the compartments are open at the same time and we have a feeling of inner peace. I love that definition of serenity, that we have access to all the information about our life narrative. We can feel it. We can give facts. We know its impact on us. Usually we've had some resolution and we know how it impacted our growth or how it was helpful for us. Not that trauma is helpful, right? But that we have maybe made meaning out of this, or we appreciate things differently now that we're healing some of that trauma. And I think there is an inner peace that comes when we have access to all the information. I think sometimes there can be this assumption that having all the information is too threatening. You know, and I usually will say, at one point it was. At one point it was, which is why things got compartmentalized. And it's a different game when we're in our adult years. I usually, to clients, I will say, I mean, there's a reason you came in here. And I'm going to trust that maybe you're not aware of that, but some part of you thinks it's time to start addressing this. I would also say the same thing, like if you've listened to my podcast regularly, you're probably in a place of trying to make sense of stuff and understand things. And, you know, you're looking for some serenity. You're looking to open up the compartments and have access and understand why I do the things that I do or why I am the way that I am, not in an authentic way, but in more of this fragmented self way. I think if you're listening to my podcast, I talk about a lot of different topics that I think could give you some insight or awareness around, you know, why you're fragmented, why you haven't integrated some things, or why you struggle with relationships, why you struggle with addiction, or why your partner does. And so, you know, the other thing, because I've talked a lot about emotional regulation, and I think that is important. And, you know, I also think for us to have serenity, we have to know what it's like to be in our window of tolerance. I don't think we're going to really get into that place of serenity without really practicing self-regulation skills and being able to, you know, kind of bring us out of hyperarousal or bring us up from hypoarousal. And I know in 12-step practices, I mean, even the serenity prayer, right, that talks about God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And I mean, I've been here before where I'm like, but what about, like, I also want to have the courage to change in the things that I cannot accept, right? And I've seen some of those memes going around, and I felt that way before. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But I think change comes when we're in that window of tolerance, when we are emotionally regulated. And I just don't think we can be, I think, you know, compartmentalization might feel stable and it might feel like we are well regulated. But because we don't have access to all the compartments at the same time, I think that actually interrupts our ability to have serenity, interrupts our ability to be emotionally regulated, and interrupts our ability to be stable. And so just some things to think about when it comes to compartmentalization. And, you know, when we're working to get to where compartmentalization isn't excessive and it's not problematic, you know, the reasons we're opening up the compartments and having multiple of them open at the same time with the goal of having all of the compartments open at one time and feeling that inner peace and inner acceptance, it is about serenity. At the end of this episode, I want to remind you that your story matters. Remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished. Until next time, Jackie.
The Legal Stuff. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and education and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help. Prayer of the Perfectionist. Nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress. Help me to remember the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me. Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone. I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastering. I am enough. Amen.